It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. Broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where we have blue skies and dark clouds at the same time. 23 degrees out at the airport right now under overcast skies, and they are clocking winds from the west at 15 miles per hour. Coming up on the Midday Report, the city of Fairbanks has banned all-purpose vehicles like four-wheelers from driving on city streets. All about the big storm last weekend that did not arrive. The favorite Alaska kids TV show will be dubbed into Alaska Native languages. And the tule geese are migrating. Those stories plus Happy Zinksgiving after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Nora Rahm. A jury in South Georgia has convicted Travis and Gregory McMichael, as well as William Bryan, for the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. From member station WABE, Alex Helmick has more.
Arbery, a black man, was jogging through Brunswick when he was chased by three white men and ultimately shot and killed by Travis McMichael. The defense said the three were trying to make a citizen's arrest and that the shooting was self-defense. But the 11 white jurors and one black juror found Travis McMichael guilty on 9 counts, including malice murder and felony murder charges, which could get him life in prison. His father, Gregory McMichael, was found guilty on all charges except malice murder. The jury found William Bryan, who filmed the shooting, guilty on 3 felony murder counts. The three men also face a federal hate crimes trial in February. For NPR News, I'm Alex Helmick.
President Biden issued a statement saying that nothing can bring Mr. Arbery back to his family and his community, but the verdict ensures those who committed this horrible crime will be punished. The number of people filing new claims for jobless benefits in the U.S. fell last week to the lowest number in 52 years. Mark Hamrick is senior economic analyst for Bankrate.com. He says the decline in first-time applications was a surprise.
Just the headline numbers are quite stunning when we see new jobless claims sinking by a huge number, 71,000, to a seasonally adjusted 199,000.
In a separate report out today, the Commerce Department said the gross domestic product, the value of all goods and services produced in the U.S., grew at an annualized rate of 2.1% in the October to December period. It's the slowest rate of growth in more than a year. The World Health Organization says Europe is currently the only region of the world where COVID-19 cases continue to increase. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports.
Cases jumped 11% in Europe last week, while they rose 6% in the rest of the world. Deaths rose from 2,000 to 4,000. The World Health Organization, or WHO, says it's due to the prevalence of the highly contagious Delta variant, insufficient vaccination coverage, and the easing of anti-coronavirus measures. Countries are now toughening measures. Austria is in a nationwide lockdown. Masks are once again mandatory outside in the Netherlands, and Christmas markets have been canceled in Germany. Even in France, where infections had been kept low by high vaccination coverage, officials say they have no choice but to tighten restrictions. The WHO warns if urgent measures aren't taken, Europe could have up to 700,000 deaths by next spring. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
On Wall Street, just before the close, the Dow is down 9 points, the S&P 500 up 10. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
The Fairbanks City Council has voted to ban all-purpose vehicles, like four-wheelers and side-by-sides, from driving on city streets. The practice has long been prohibited statewide, but a Dunleavy administration regulatory change that takes effect January 1st will make it legal for licensed and insured drivers to operate registered APVs on roads with less than 45 miles per hour speed limit, unless local governments, like the city of Fairbanks, take action. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
The Fairbanks City Council heard testimony in support of banning APVs from city streets, including from the police and fire chiefs. University of Alaska Fairbanks traffic safety expert Nathan Bells urged the council to heed their recommendations.
The data also tells us that opening up roads to off-highway vehicles will result in more fatalities and serious injuries.
But city police have acknowledged enforcement is difficult and a lesser priority.
We don't waste police resources to go and ticket them or try and find them.
Councilmember Jerry Cleworth likened the APV ban to a commonly ignored law that prohibits smoking near building entrances.
Should the police come and enforce that? No, they should not. It's a waste of their time.
City Mayor Jim Matherly expressed optimism that passage of the local ordinance banning operation of APVs on city streets will raise awareness.
Because now they hear that it is illegal and prohibited where they didn't know before.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough has also expressed safety concerns about APVs on roads, but unlike the city, it does not have the regulatory power to do anything about it. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
As last weekend approached, Kodiak was warned to brace for a heavy winter snowstorm. 55-mile-per-hour winds, up to 8 inches of snow, the works. And then a Saturday arrived. Not much. A dramatic flurry of snow around noontime, and then the normal cloudy and moderately windy day. Federal meteorologist Mike Ottenweller, who works out of the National Weather Service's Anchorage office, says forecast models in Alaska are pretty tough, as there are not as many sensors and data points as there are in the lower 48.
From radar coverage to surface observations to upper air balloons, the weather balloons that we launch twice a day, there's just less data to go into those models. We've sometimes informally inside the office referred to the area where that storm was developing as the Bermuda Triangle of lacking weather information. So it's just an area that's devoid of any observing platforms.
Big winter snowstorms on Kodiak Island only happen under a very specific set of circumstances. Cold air massing together with a big low pressure, a fair amount of wind, cold sea water, all moving close but not too close to the island. That's what makes for the big snowstorms. They ultimately did get a spectacular snowstorm, but it traveled 100 miles to the east of its expected path.
You know, Yakutat did get quite a bit of snow. I do not know the numbers, but I would guess on the order of 6 to 10 inches would be very reasonable. Cordova got 5 to 8 inches during the day Saturday, and that was, you know, right on the western periphery of that low. So there was snow to be found. I think if there was a mariner who was running through the Gulf of Alaska Saturday afternoon, he or she certainly would have found plenty of snow out there.
As the colder season progresses, the Weather Service is beginning to have a clearer picture of what this winter might look like. Ottenweller says Kodiak can expect a moderately colder than winter than normal, a trend forecasters say they expect statewide. Precipitation returns look normal for Kodiak Island, but that could still mean more snow with colder temperatures. Two episodes of a favorite Alaska Kids TV show will be done in Alaska Native languages. Molly of Denali, about a 10-year-old interior Alaska girl and her friends, has been airing in English since 2019. Now the Doyen Foundation is working to dub two episodes of the show into Gwich'in and Koyukon languages.
The Language Revitalization Program of the Doyen Foundation put out a call for actors who can speak two of the languages of the region. The foundation is working with GBH Boston, which produces the fictional PBS cartoon Molly of Denali, to create episodes representing all the real Mollies out there.
Hey everyone, it's me, Molly!
Molly of Denali.
Alan Hayton, the Language Revitalization Program Director, says the episodes of the show called King Run and Grandpa's Drum will be dubbed into Gwich'in.
We did have quite a number of auditions. I've been reviewing those, and we were able to nail down the Gwich'in cast. We're still working on the second cast, the Danaka or Khoikhoi.
Children have been cast in the lead roles. Linnea Frank will play Molly, and Adriel Guinness will play her friend Tui. Cast members are getting ready to rehearse to perfect the language pronunciations and the emotions of the stories. Then they will record the voices, which incidentally will be at KUAC's radio studio.
We'll have to make sure it times out as well, because Athabascan language is very different than English, and a word in Athabascan could be full sentence length, especially the verbs. So you have to time it with the actual animation, because we can't change that. That's going to stay the same.
When the Gwich'in audio is correctly timed with the animation, the tracks will be sent to Atomic Cartoons in Vancouver, Canada, who will integrate the audio into the existing Molly of Denali episodes. Hayton says he's consulted on the show and trusts the folks in British Columbia and Boston to represent Alaska faithfully.
They do a really good job at WGBH in integrating culture and making sure that they vet things, including all those cultural elements that maybe most people would miss, but people that are here in Alaska watching the show, they definitely notice.
The cartoons will be used in Doyon Region language revitalization efforts. The Danaka or Khoikhoi group chose the episodes Have Canoe Will Paddle and Main Game, and the cast for those episodes will be chosen soon. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
It's the second holiday season of the COVID-19 pandemic. But this year has one major difference if you ask the state's top doctor.
We have vaccine this year versus last year we didn't. That's a really big game changer.
In a media call last week, Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink told reporters the vaccine has taken a burden out of the holiday planning by allowing families to gather together more safely. Dr. Zink recommends over-the-counter COVID tests if someone in your holiday gathering is immunocompromised or if there will be a large group of people. She said some of her family was initially skeptical about how easy they'd be to use, but now they're converts. She said she won't be home with them for Thanksgiving this year, however.
My Thanksgiving isn't going to be as fun as probably others. I'll be working in the emergency department, partially because my colleagues are really getting a chance to partner and to be with their families, which they haven't been able to be. And so covering for them so they can gather with their families.
The state's health department recommends avoiding crowded indoor spaces, wearing a mask around anyone who has a weakened immune system, and staying home if you're sick. The state's COVID-19 dashboard will not be updated over the holiday. Starting December 6th, the state will return to COVID-19 reporting on 3 days per week. Tule geese migrate from Cook Inlet down to California every year. They can be spotted by birders on the Central Peninsula in the spring as they cross over the Gulf of Alaska on their long journey south. There's not a lot of margin for error during that journey, but last year geese took twice as long to get to California, as they came up against some of the largest wildfires in Canada and the lower 48 to date. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Corey Overton is a wildlife biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. He was the lead author on a study published last month that found the geese had to drastically alter their migration patterns in 2020.
Tule geese are among the first migrants to come down across the Gulf of Alaska towards California. And so we watch with bated breath every year for them to come down and see what they're doing.
Tule geese are a subspecies of white-fronted geese. For a long time, they nested across Cook Inlet at the base of Mount Redoubt. Now, they nest on the northern part of Cook Inlet. Scientists speculate Redoubt's 1989 eruption is to blame for the change. Overton's team has been tracking the geese for several years with radio collars. Last year, as the wildfires outside got worse and worse, they noticed something strange.
And really over the course of about 3 or 4 days, we realized that every individual that had come down last year was acting odd.
At the same time, his team was studying smoke maps. There was a low-pressure smoke system that was pulling smoke off the West Coast.
This big band of smoke was like a wall to these birds migrating down. And when they hit the southern edge of Vancouver Island, kind of northern Olympic Peninsula, they hit smoke that would be classified as unhealthy for humans, and they pretty much stopped.
The birds tried several different things to get around that wall.
They can just ignore it and act like normal. They could stop and wait the smoke out. They could try and go around it, or they could try and go over the top. And even though it's a small number of birds, we saw them do every one of those things except for ignore it.
Those diversions made their migrations twice as long. Overton says that's concerning because it already takes a lot of calories for geese to travel from Alaska to California. They don't have much energy to spare.
These birds don't really have a whole lot of reserve. So if they have to extend their migration either by flying, backtracking to go around something, or stop like on the ocean where they can't refuel, that could have pretty big impacts to their survivability and their ability to make it.
He says it's hard to say what the implications of increasing wildfires could be on other species of birds. In some ways, the tule geese are special. They come down earlier than others and have fewer places they stop on the way. But scientists have found smoke to be a potential factor in instances of bird die-off in parts of the lower 48. Going forward, Overton says he's interested in how nesting species in the Arctic might be impacted by more severe fires in Alaska as well. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
The Haynes Sheldon Museum is showcasing a display of newly revealed Tlingit formline images. The museum staff used an infrared camera to photograph traditional bentwood boxes to reveal paintings not seen in perhaps 200 years. KHNS's Corinne Smith has this report.
Several traditional Tlingit bentwood boxes make up part of the Haynes Sheldon Museum's 23,000-item collection. Handmade out of cedar wood and painted, the boxes were used for storage or traded goods, according to Museum Collections Coordinator Zachary James.
These ones, I think, were probably used for regalia because they have really nice paintings on them, but they were general-purpose storage boxes, too.
James is Tlingit, with ancestry in Wrangell and the Stikine Basin, as well as the Chilkat Valley. And he has an active interest in Tlingit art and heritage, especially new ways of looking at pieces from the museum's collection.
It just basically looks like a black surface on wood, and then these kind of amazing images are able to be pulled out of it.
Traditional bentwood boxes come in various sizes. Large boxes stored blankets, clothing, and ceremonial items. Medium-sized boxes stored food, and small boxes held berries, sewing materials, and special treasures. Over time, the outside varnish darkened, probably from soot or grime and storage conditions, obscuring the original paintings. Some were completely hidden, others you can see a faint outline.
And if you look at it from the side, you can kind of see, under certain light conditions, you can kind of see that there is a design, but you can't really make it out very clearly.
Using an infrared lens on a digital camera, James photographed the bentwood boxes, which date back to the 1800s, capturing the striking formline images below.
The way it works is infrared light penetrates through the patina or the varnish, the yellowed varnish on the outside of the piece, and then normal light reflects off of the very outside. The infrared light penetrates through the varnish and then bounces off the pigment or off of the wood and then reflects back. And so it has the ability to see through the kind of grime on the outside.
For James, it was an exciting reveal.
It's probably the first time in a couple hundred years that these designs and these pieces of art have even been able to be appreciated or looked at. So I felt like it was good to see it again.
Haynes Sheldon Museum Board President Colleen Adams says James' initiative and the project is valuable for the Haynes community.
It's such a treasure to have these in Haynes. And for Zach to come up with this idea to bring this artwork to life, to show people what has been underneath that for hundreds of years, it's amazing. So we are very fortunate to be able to witness this.
James says the newly revealed designs are significant to the larger project of recovering and protecting the Tlingit heritage of the Chilkat Valley in Southeast Alaska.
Constantly, Native art has been taken out of Native hands and put in, European or American institutions. I mean, there's Tlingit art from this valley in Russia and in Germany and all over, University of Pennsylvania. We have no idea what's in private hands, what was lost over the years. So every scrap of information about the Tlingit art forms that we can draw from is important.
Formline involves a complex and often subtle language of rules and motifs, and so James says the recovered images are important for local Tlingit artists to study the art form. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Clean energy solutions for Alaska are showcased in the future ocean podcasts. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Anything happening in the oceans, including ocean acidification, affects our livelihood. It affects our understanding of the crab, and for us to have our jobs, we need to make sure that crab resources remain sustainable.
That's Jamie Gowen, director of the trade group Alaska Bering Sea Crabbers, who, as a former oceanographer, tested off-kilter ocean chemistry around the globe. She's one of many specialists featured in a six-part Future Ocean podcast series by the Alaska Ocean Observing System. Gowen and others explore connections between increasing ocean acidity, ocean warming, and algae blooms. In Episode 3, economists explain carbon pricing and how a price put on emissions can be used as a tool to phase out fossil fuels.
Yeah, it's been many years and many failures in the making to get something of this ambition done, to set a new standard for state action.
That's Kevin Tempest of Seattle's Low Carbon Prosperity Institute. Following California's lead, Washington State earlier this year passed a law creating a market-based cap-and-trade program and another to reduce carbon in transportation fuels. Number 6 showcases clean energy projects in 80 rural Alaska communities. How renewables can be financed through a green bank and showcases Kodiak, where nearly 100% of the community is powered by hydro and wind. The series is all about carbon policy solutions to protecting Alaska's waters and fisheries. Included is a free Alaska Energy Smart curriculum for K-12 students. The series was produced by Dorothy Childers and Maggie Wall. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 24th day of November, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:15. It will set again at 4:36 this afternoon, giving us 7 hours and 21 minutes of daylight. That's a loss of 3 minutes and 29 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 49 degrees. That was set in 2010. And our record low was 6 degrees, set in 2021. Presently, a relatively balmy 23 degrees out at the airport. They have overcast skies and winds from the west 15 miles per hour. They're calling for partly sunny skies today, with a high near 25, northwest winds to 15, gusting to 20. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies, low of 12, west winds to 20. And for Thanksgiving Day, just a chance of snow showers between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny skies with a high near 20 and northwest winds around 15, gusting as high as 20. Strike that as high as 30, it says. Chance of precipitation just 30% for Thanksgiving. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. The next high tide will be at 4:05 p.m. and be 8.4 feet here on the east side. That'll be followed by a low tide at 11:08 p.m. of 6/10 of a foot. Our next high tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 5:58 a.m., about 6 a.m., and be 6.3 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:33 this afternoon of 12.7 feet in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a low tide at 11:28 p.m. of 1 foot. And your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 6:08 a.m. and be 10.8 feet. Mariners, we have some ugly sounding weather coming up tomorrow and tonight. For Kodiak's east side offshore, Marmot Island to Sitkanak. Gale warning for Thursday, heavy freezing spray warning for tonight and Thursday. For today, northwest wind to 20, seas to 9 feet with freezing spray. Tonight, northwest 20, south of Dangerous Cape, northwest 20, increasing to 30 after midnight. Seas 9 feet with heavy freezing spray, south of Dangerous Cape after midnight. For tomorrow, west wind to 40 knots north of Dangerous Cape, northwest 20 knots in the morning, increasing to 30 knots, seas to 13 feet, heavy freezing spray tomorrow on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning tonight and Thursday with a heavy freezing spray warning through Thursday in the Shelikof. Northwest 30 today, seas to 6 feet with heavy freezing spray in the Shelikof. For tonight, northwest 40, gusting to 55 out of bays and passes after midnight, seas to 8 feet with heavy freezing spray. And for tomorrow, northwest 40, gusting to 55 knots, increasing to 65 knots in the afternoon out of bays and passes, seas to 8 feet and heavy freezing spray in the Shelikof tomorrow. The Kodiak Lions Club will be presenting Ghostbuster Afterlife at the Orpheum Theater on Friday in a special matinee fundraiser for the food bank. The doors will open at 1:30 p.m. and the show starts at 2 p.m. The cost of admission for 12 years and younger is 3 non-perishable items, and for 13 years and older, the cost is 5 non-perishable items, or you can just bring $5 per person. All food donated will go to the Kodiak Salvation Army Food Bank. And again, that's this next Friday, 1:30 p.m. The doors open. Show starts at 2. 3 non-perishable items for 12 and under. 5 for 13 and over. The holiday season is a time for giving, and you can help comfort Kodiak kids in foster care by bringing a new stuffed animal or children's book to the library at any time before December 22nd. You can lighten up a kid's holiday, and donations will be given to the Kodiak Office of Children's Services to be shared with foster kids in Kodiak. The public library will close 5 p.m. on Wednesday the 24th, that's today, and it'll be closed all day tomorrow and Friday, November 26th. Regular hours and curbside service resume Saturday, November 27th at 7 a.m., 10 a.m. rather. And library trivia returns Monday. That happens at 6:30 p.m. Contact Lori at the library to be included, or the link to the Zoom meeting from the library's webpage. Join the fun and tickle your gray matter. If you need information about any of this, call the library at 486-8686. And the Kodiak Kiwanis Tree Sale kicks off this Friday. And for this Friday, the 26th, they will be open at noon and be open all the way until 7 p.m. For all other Fridays, they'll be start at 4 and go to 7. For Saturdays, 10 to 4. And for Sundays, 12 noon to 4 p.m. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting their third annual Community Memorial Tree. Come on down to the brewery and buy an ornament for any donation amount. decorate it with a loved one's name, memory, or story, and then you can hang it on their community memorial tree in celebration of their life. This event runs from November 12th through January 7th at the Kodiak Island Brewery. All donations raised will be helped to use help HPCK join the journey of those facing life-threatening illness or loss, meeting needs, reducing fears, and offering comfort. Well, the big concert from the Isle Bells is coming up. The Holiday Bells concert is Sunday, December 12th at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Tickets are $12. There are two shows, 4 p.m. with Father Christmas and 7 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.